A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, The Final Prophecy, by Greg Keyes. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. She was being followed. She paused and wiped a damp wisp of yellow hair from her forehead, touching the scars that marked her as a member of Domain Quad. They must have followed her to Dagobah. How? She twisted her way through a maze of gnarl trees and then clambered quickly and silently up their cable-like roots. She reached out with the Force to better assess her pursuit. They weren't there, and she suddenly realized that she hadn't felt them in the Force, but with her Vong sense. It had come so naturally, she hadn't even questioned it. That could only mean her pursuers were Yuuzhan Vong. Maybe six of them, give or take one or two. Vong sense wasn't as precise as the Force. She reached for her lightsaber, but didn't unclip it, and continued to wait. Soon, she actually heard them. A dark shadow glided soundlessly through the undergrowth, and she snapped her gaze up in time to see something very large blot the fragments of sky not occluded by the distant canopy. Native life or a Yuuzhan Vong flyer? Pursing her lips, she waited. Soon the distant muttering became coherent. As she'd thought, the language was that of her creche.
"Are you certain she came this way?"
a raspy voice asked.
"She did. See? The impression in the moss."
"She is Jedi. Perhaps she left these signs to confuse us."
"Perhaps."
"And you think she is near?"
"Yes."
"And knows we are following her?"
"Yes."
"Then why not simply call out to her?"
"And hope I answer the battle challenge?" Tahiri thought grimly. So they did have a tracker with them. Moving very slowly, Tahiri shifted in the direction of the voices. She could make out several figures through the understory, but not distinctly.
"Jedi!"
the tracker called.
"I think you can hear us. We humbly request an audience."
She leaned out for a better view and found herself staring straight into the yellow eyes of a Yuuzhan Vong. He was perhaps 6 meters away. She gasped at the sight of him, and revulsion jolted through her. His face was like an open wound. A shamed one, despised by the gods. He dared. Her hand went to her lightsaber. Then the shadow was back, and suddenly something sleeted through the branches, shredding the leaves and vines around her. Above her, through the now open canopy, she saw a Yuuzhan Vong Sikvai, an atmospheric flyer, huge and ray-shaped, and from it snaked long cables. To each cable clung a Yuuzhan Vong warrior. A terrible wail went up from her pursuers. She could see them now, all horribly disfigured, all shamed ones. They raised their short clubs and faced the warriors. They didn't have a chance. She saw that immediately. For an instant, the tracker held her eye, and she thought he would give her away. But instead, his expression went grim.
"Run!"
he shouted.
"We cannot win here!"
Tahiri hesitated only an instant longer, then made a series of step-like leaps to the ground. The first of the shamed ones had already fallen when her feet touched the spongy soil. A warrior caught her motion from the corner of his eye and turned to meet her, snarling a war cry. His face transfigured in surprise when she answered it in his own language. He whirled his ampi-staff toward her, a lateral strike aimed at her scapula. She caught the blade and cut toward his knuckles, but he parried with distance, pulled his weapon free of the bind, and lunged deep with the venomous tip. She caught it in a high sweep and stepped in, cut to his shoulder, where the Von Dune crab armor shed its fury in a shower of sparks. Then dodged past, reversing the weapon and plunging its fiery point into the vulnerable spot in the armpit. The warrior gasped and sank to his knees, and she whipped the weapon around to decapitate him, even as she launched herself at the next foe. Combat was a blur after that. 8 warriors had dropped from the flyer. Parry, thrust, and cut became her entire existence. Spattered with Yuuzhan Vong blood and bleeding from several cuts of her own, she suddenly found herself back to back with the tracker. He was all that remained of the 6 who had initially been following her, but there were still 3 warriors standing. The shamed one suddenly bolted forward so quickly he took the leader by surprise, bowling into him before he could raise his weapon. The other 2 turned to help, but Tahiri danced forward, feinting at the knee and then cutting high through the warrior's throat when he dropped his guard to parry. She exchanged a flurry of blows with the 2nd, though it ended the same, with the warrior flopping lifeless to the ground. She turned to find the tracker impaling the leader with his own amphistaff. For a moment, they stared at each other, the shamed one and she. Then the Yuuzhan Vong suddenly dropped to his knees.
I prayed it was you.
Tahiri saw he was clutching his side and that blood covered his flank. Let me see that, she said. He shook his head.
I must speak to you first.
What are you doing here? Did you follow me? His eyes widened.
No,
he said, so vehemently that blood sputtered from between his lips. Then, more quietly,
no, we thieved a ship from an intendant and came here to find the world of prophecy. We saw you land. Is this the place, one who was shaped? Is this the world the prophet saw?
I'm sorry, Tahiri said. I don't know what you mean. This is Dagobah. The tracker straightened a bit, and his voice strengthened.
I am Hul'Kot, once a hunter. Or I was, until the gods seemed to reject me. I was stripped of my title, my clan. I was shamed. My implants festered and my scars opened like wounds. I gave up hope and waited for dishonorable death. But then I heard the word of the prophet and of the Jedi Anakin.
Anakin, Tahiri whispered.
Yes, and you, whom Mijan Quad shaped, and Vua Rapung, who fought. You were there, were you not?
I was there.
Then you know. You know our redemption belongs with you. And now the prophet has seen a world where there are no shamed ones, because it will redeem us, where the true way can be.
He coughed violently and slumped again, and for an instant, Tahiri thought he was already dead. But then his eyes turned toward her.
My companions and I wanted to find the planet for our prophet. One of us, Coco, had been a shaper. He used a genetic slicer to get access to an executor's Kosa and steal its secrets. He found intelligence gathered about the Jedi, and evidence that there was some connection between you and this world. Some of your greatest came here, yes, and now you. And so please, tell me, have I found it?
Tahiri reached out and took his hand. Yes, she lied, not even knowing exactly what lie she was telling. You found it. Don't worry about anything now. His eyes filled with tears.
You must help me, he said. I cannot take the news myself. The prophet must know where this world is.
I will do it, Tahiri said. This time, she was not lying. A distorted grin sliced Anami's crooked head in a sign of mock regard.
Sweet Nenim, he croaked. How delightful your presence.
Have you come on some errand, Anami, or merely to waste my time in foolish conversation?
I bring a dainty, Anami said.
A glistering pustule from the gods. A gift for my sweet little.
Address me as master, Ninyim said stiffly. Anami's eyes went wide, and then he set a finger to his lips, leaned near, and whispered,
Fleeting time laps hours, devours days, months, and years, passes them like gas.
She said nothing. What other response was there? But Anami gestured, and with a great deal of reluctance, she followed him down the mycoluminescent corridor of her central Damutech, through the laboratories where she worked her heretical science to produce the miracles the Yuuzhan Vong needed to take their rightful place in a galaxy of infidels. At last they arrived in a dim space. Something irregular and large bulked ahead. Light was in it, a faint shifting radiance so delicate it could almost be the colors of the dark behind her eyes. She walked nearer, her shaping fingers outstretched to feel and taste the surface. It was smooth, almost slick. It tasted of long carbon chains and water and silicates. It tasted quick and familiar.
This is alive, she whispered.
Sleek. That was the first impression. The glass-like surface curved into four long lozenges that sharpened almost to needles on one end and ended rounded on the other. Damaged, that was the second impression. The life that hummed beneath her fingers flickered in some places and was absent in others, where the hull, yes, hull, had gone dark.
This is a ship.
Nenya murmured, more to herself than to the useless Anami.
A living ship, but not Yuuzhan Vong. This came from one of the infidel peoples?
Anami handed her something, a small portable kosa.
Secrets are like knives, he said softly. Of your tongue a secret make, and your mouth is cut.
He left then, and she watched him go with disdain. Idiotic to warn her of secrets. She was a heretic. A heretic secretly kept by the Supreme Overlord. Everything she did was done in obscurity. Kneeling in the presence of Supreme Overlord Shimra, Nenyim believed in the gods. It was impossible not to. He was shadow and dread, awesome and unreachable. She crouched at his feet and was nothing.
You have studied the thing.
I have, Dread One, Nenyim replied. It is a ship. Like our own ships, it is a living organism.
Not at all, Shimra interrupted. It has no Dovin basals. Its engines are like the infidel engines. Dead metal.
True, Nenyim agreed. And parts of its structure are not alive. But...
Then it is an infidel thing,
Shimra thundered.
It is nothing like our ships.
That is so, Dread One, Nenyim admitted. As it is an abomination. And yet, at its heart, the biotechnology is similar to our own. The infidel engines, for instance, could be withdrawn and replaced with Dovin basals. The living structure of one of our own vessels could have such a ship grown around it. This biotechnology is compatible with our own.
Compatible? Shimra growled. Are you saying that this is one of our ships, somehow transfigured by the infidels?
No. Ninyim replied. In outward form, this thing is very different from our vessels. The hull is not Yorick coral. The architectures of our ships were derived from various creatures of the homeworld, and those structures can still be recognized in their design. The alien technology is different. It begins with relatively undifferentiated organisms that specialize as the ship grows.
And yet you still maintain it is similar to our God's given ships?
At the most basic level, yes.
cellularly, molecularly. And that is the most unlikely level at which we should expect to find resemblance.
Again, could the infidels have stolen our technology and distorted it?
It's possible. But according to the Khoisa, the planet of its origin is itself a living organism.
That is a lie,
Shimra said.
Ekim Val was deluded. He was duped by the infidels.
I'm relieved to hear this, she said. I thought the tale unlikely myself.
She drew herself straighter.
Still, there is nothing in the protocols that could account for a ship like this. Nor do I think this technology is a result of the manipulation of our technology. It is both alien and similar to our own.
Shimra was silent for a moment. Then his voice came again, leashed terror.
It is not superior.
No, Dreadlord. Just different.
Of course. And you can develop weapons against it?
I can. Indeed, Lord. There are already weapons in the protocols that would be most effective against technology of this sort. Oddly, they are weapons we have never built or had use for.
As if the gods anticipated this necessity.
Yes.
Excellent.
With a wave of his massive hand, Shimra dismissed her. A cycle later, Nen Yim settled onto a sitting hummock in her private horsium and regarded Asi Yim. The younger shaper was narrower in every dimension than Nen Yim, and her blue-gray flesh had an opalescent sheen about it. Her attentive eyes were a rare shade of bronze. Her master's hand was very new, but they were peers.
What brought you to the heresy, Asim? She asked softly.
The other master considered this quietly for a moment.
I worked on the changing of Duro, she said at last. On the surface of things, on the record, we work strictly by the protocols. And yet, often the protocols were not suitable. They were not sufficiently flexible for what needed to be done. Some of us did what was necessary. Later, I was assigned here to Yuuzhan'tar, where so much went wrong. The masters there were very orthodox. I saw the shortcomings of that. At the same time, I saw evidence of the infidels' ability to adapt, to change their abominable technology, not just in small ways, but in large ones. I determined that in time, because of this, they must ultimately triumph, unless we did the same. So I practiced heresy.
And were discovered, Nen Yim said. You would have been sacrificed to the gods if I had not had you brought here.
I serve my people,
Asi Yim said.
The protocols do not. I would die for that.
So would I, Nen Yim said.
And so I risk both our lives once more. Do you understand?
Asi Yim did not blink.
Yes. You may have heard that the Supreme Overlord brought me something to examine. Yes.
Eagerness showed in Asi Yim's eyes.
It is a ship, Nen Yim said. A ship based on a biotechnology much like ours. More similar than anything in this galaxy thus far. And the protocols have in them certain weapons that seem designed peculiarly well to deal with it. Shimra claims the gods must have anticipated our need. What do you think? I think that is not true,
Asi said softly.
The protocols have not changed in hundreds, perhaps thousands of years. They have not anticipated anything else in this galaxy. Why should they anticipate this?
Nen Yim nodded.
I believe as you do. Then what explanation do you offer? Our ancestors met this technology in the past,
Asiyim said.
We battled against it, and the weapons from that battle remain in the Kang Khossa.
Shall I tell you a tale?
Nenyim asked.
I would be honored.
I have in my possession the personal Khossa of Ekim Val, the commander who brought this ship to Lord Shimra. He was sent years ago to explore the galaxy. He came across a planet named Zonama Sikot. Ekim Val said the planet itself was alive, its life forms symbiotic, as if shaped to live together.
They shape life as we do?
They shape life, yes, not as we do. And the sentient race there is nothing like Yuuzhan Vong. Indeed, from the records, I think they must be a race native to this galaxy. Feroans.
What happened to Commander Val?
He was attacked and repelled, but he managed to capture the ship before leaving the system.
And the planet?
Shimra claims it has been destroyed.
You do not believe him?
No, I've been asked to create weapons that might affect it.
Asiyim asked,
Why are you telling me this?
Because, Nenyim replied, I think you know things I do not, have connections that I do not.
What sort of things?
She asked stiffly.
For one, I think you have heard of Ekim Val before.
A long silence this time.
Are you asking something of me?
She said at last.
If this planet exists, I must see it for myself. The ship alone is not enough. I must know more.
Why?
Because I think if I do not, our species is doomed.
Nenyim said. Beneath the black sky of Yuuzhan Tar, Nenyim moved invisibly. She was cloaked in a creature of her own modification, a variant of the special Ooglith cloakers that hunters wore. Its billion tiny sensory nodes gazed at the night, heard it, tasted it, and made her a part of it. She passed from Shimra's fortress compound easily enough. She moved on rougher ground now, down a slope, and then up to the platform where a shrine to Yun Harla, the trickster goddess, overlooked a vast pit that had once been sky-reaching buildings. A single figure awaited her in the shrine, beneath a statue of Yun Yuuzhan that had been made from the skulls and long bones of the conquered. The one waiting was male, lean, his hair knotted in a patterned scarf.
Priest, she thought, what could you want with me?
She moved out of his sight and removed the cloak, then walked back to the shrine. This time, his gaze found her instantly. His body remained still.
You've come at a strange time to perform your ablutions, the priest said.
I come when I am called, Nenyim answered.
So must we all, the priest answered. I am Harar.
Nenyim's spine prickled. She knew that name.
So not just any priest, a very important one.
I am called Nenyim, Honored One, she replied.
There are rumors of you, Shaper,
he said.
You labor alone, under heavy guard in the Supreme Overlord's compound. It is said you are most favored by the gods, and yet so few know you exist at all. Even a whisper is too loud a tone to speak of you in. It is said that some have died who could not keep that whisper in.
And yet you know of me.
What I wish to know is this. Why is Lord Shimra's most favored shaper trying to contact the pitiful remnants of his political enemies?
I know nothing of these politics,
Nenyim replied.
Shimra is the supreme overlord. I owe allegiance to none other. I desire allegiance to none other.
Harar cocked his head.
Come now, why else contact us?
Us? Harar's fierce grin expanded a bit.
Of course. Clumsy you may have been, but you have succeeded. Shimra has enemies. You have found them. What do you want from us?
I've just told you, I seek no enemy of my supreme overlord.
But you move in secret, without his knowledge. What do you want?
It begins with a commandar named Ekim Val, she said softly. Harar's eyes widened at the name.
Ah, he said. I begin to understand your caution. Please continue.
She told him, in brief, what she knew, but she left much out. She made no mention of her heresy, but couched her studies of the ship in orthodox terms. When she was done, a moment of silence dragged a long tale.
Astonishing, he said at last. Are you aware of the heresy?
Her blood went cold and heavy.
Heresy? Among the shamed ones. The obscene belief that the Jedi are somehow the saviors of the shamed.
Yes, Nim-Nim replied, hoping her composure hadn't slipped.
This heresy now has a leader, a prophet. Little is known of him, but he is gaining in power. Not long ago, he made a prophecy of a new world, a home for the shamed ones, a promise of redemption, a living world. Does this not sound like your Zonama Seacott?
I know nothing of this prophet or his babblings, Nenyim said.
Again, I do not doubt you.
His eyes narrowed.
Do you know where this supposed world is?
No.
So you would have me smuggle you from beneath Shimra's nose, equip you with a ship?
I can supply my own ship, Nenyim interrupted. His eyes turned appraising, but he resumed.
Very well. So I need only smuggle you out, outfit you, and help you find this planet, which Shimra claims is destroyed. That is what I desire, yes. I cannot do that, he said. I am too highly placed. I will be noticed.
Then I have come in vain, Nenyim said, preparing the weapon in her finger.
Perhaps not, the priest said. Perhaps the prophet of whom I spoke could aid you.
Nenyim relaxed marginally.
You counsel me to collaborate with a heretic? This heresy is widespread and well organized,
Harar said.
It, as much as your Zonama Seacott, is a threat to the well-being of our people. I feel certain that if this prophet can be convinced you are with his cause, he will find a way to help you. Especially if, as you say, you have a ship. Yes, she said. It's getting the ship off the surface of Yuuzhan'tar and out of this system. That is the problem.
Nome Anor turned the message this way and that in his mind, and saw it sharp in every angle. It was hard to wrap his thoughts around it without feeling the cut, so pregnant with the possibility of betrayal, it seemed.
Who sent you, Loin Sul?
He asked the messenger softly.
I come on behalf of the Shapar, Nenyim.
Sul answered. Nome Anor nodded. Sul had been checked for implants, of course, though no test short of thorough dissection was certain.
Why does this Shapar not come to me herself?
She may not leave Lord Shimra's compound, I am told. She takes great risk even in sending this message.
Why does she seek me out?
Nome Anor asked.
She heard of your prophecy of the new world. She desires to see this world for herself.
So you have already said.
Why does she seek my aid?
Who else could give it? Shimra and his minions are corrupt. They have done everything they can to deny the existence of our Redeemer. He and the Elite will do much more, because they know that if the truth is known, they will be seen as the false leaders they are, and you, my lord, will be seen as the true prophet.
What does a Shepar care for that?
Nomanor wondered aloud.
Nen-Yim seeks only truth, Sul said.
A vague chanting had gone up among Nomanor's acolytes. He began to wish he had received Sul in private, rather than in front of 30 or so followers.
Quiet!
Nomanor said, his mind whirling furiously. Zonama Sikat was indeed important, if only because Shimra feared it so much. He knew, too, that the Shaper had been given what remained of the Sakoten ship to study, and it would seem she had discovered something quite important. This message suggested one of two possibilities. Either she was telling the truth, and she needed help from outside the system to escape Shimra and find the planet, or, more likely, they thought Nomanor knew where the planet was. They couldn't know that he had learned of the planet by eavesdropping on Shimra and Ekimval, that what he had learned there was all he knew. Well, not quite all. He had heard rumors that the Jedi had found the world.
The prophecy is indeed nearing fulfillment, Nomanor told his followers. But something remains. A piece is missing. When I set foot upon the new world, I shall not be alone. Jedi will be with me.
A collective gasp went up at that.
The time has come, Nomanor said solemnly. As Vuarapung fought with Anakin Solo, so shall I and the Jedi free the Shaper and find our world.
Cheers, of course. Let the Jedi do the work and take the risk of freeing Nen-Yim. If they failed, they would be blamed rather than him. If they succeeded, then perhaps he would indeed bring his own prophecy to fruition. At the moment, he had little to lose. Han Solo scowled and shook a crooked finger at Tahiri.
Kid, he drawled, I hope you aren't counting on another lucky break your whole life, because you've just used up whatever you may have had coming.
I didn't have a choice, Tahiri pointed out. The frigate was sort of between me and escape.
Sure you had a choice. You had a whole planet to hide on. What was your blazing hurry?
I made a promise, Tahiri said.
A promise? To what, a marsh spider?
No, to a shamed one.
A Yuuzhan Vong?
His tone was incredulous, but then his face registered his mistake. Everyone was still getting used to exactly who she was now. Yes, Tahiri said.
But...
Han began, but Leia cut him off. My husband is just trying to tell you he was worried about you and he's glad you're home. I know, Tahiri said, and I appreciate it. Han's face softened, and then set into lines of reluctant acceptance.
Well, yeah, but I still think...
Why don't you get cleaned up, Tahiri, and we'll have a bit of dinner. We can talk more then. Tahiri woke, not knowing exactly where she was. She lay still in the darkness, letting the world return to her, solidify about her, fearing something but not knowing what. The Millennium Falcon, she thought. Right, that's where I am. She glanced at the table chrono and realized she'd been asleep for almost a standard day. Shaking off the dream shroud, she pulled on her Jedi robes, visited the fresher, and then went looking for Han and Leia. She found them in the lounge discussing something in low and somewhat heated tones. She coughed softly, not wanting to eavesdrop. The two turned toward her. Finally up, I see, Leia said. Her voice sounded a bit odd. Yeah, Tahiri replied. She slid in next to Leia and clasped her hands together in front of her, trying to think how to start. You said something about a promise,
Leia prompted. Right. Briefly, Tahiri laid out the events on Dagobah. The Shamed Ones were looking for a planet, she said when she was done with the narrative. The same one Master Skywalker was looking for and found. Zonama Seacot. Han's eyes widened slightly. Then he puffed and raised his hands in a gesture of frustration.
Leia, he said, you tell her.
Leia pursed her lips. Kenth Hamner contacted us while you were asleep, on a heavily coded channel. He wants to talk to you. Kenth Hamner. She couldn't quite picture his face. She seemed to remember it was long. Did he say what it was about? Not exactly, Leia said cautiously. But it involves Zonama Seacot and a dissident movement within the Yuuzhan Vong. Kenth Hamner did indeed have a long face. He also had a firm handshake and an office so spare it might have been a storeroom.
It's going to be a big push, Kenth was saying. Exactly how big, I'm not at liberty to say.
It's not an attack on Coruscant itself, Leia asked.
Nothing so ambitious, Kenth said.
Well, looks like the rest of the gang is here,
a new voice interposed. Tahiri spun from the window. A shortish, neatly goateed man stood there.
Corin!
In the aging flesh, he said. It's nice to meet you, Tahiri.
The surge of joy she'd felt at seeing the former Corsec officer faded a little at the odd turn of phrase. So he knew she had changed, of course, and he had that guarded look in his eyes. That was Corin. Suspicion was as natural a part of him as it was her. Still, it felt bad. Hamner cleared his throat.
I hate to break up the reunion, but...
Yeah,
Han said. What's this about exactly?
Hamner set something on the desk. Tahiri recognized it immediately.
A Yuuzhan Vong Kosa, she said.
Hamner nodded and stroked the cilia-covered knobs in the back. A face suddenly extruded from the front. A Yuuzhan Vong visage in miniature. Though the detail wasn't that of a holograph, it was still clear that the face was horribly disfigured, and not in the way the Yuuzhan Vong preferred.
A shamed one, she murmured.
We got this from a Yuuzhan Vong courier 2 days ago, Hamner said.
Intercepted? Corin asked.
No, Hamner replied. It was sent to us.
It's from the Prophet, Tahiri said.
Kenth raised an eyebrow.
Yes.
He touched the Kosa again, and the face animated, speaking in accented basic.
I greet you, the face said. I am known as Yusha, the Prophet. It may be that you have heard of me, that I am the leader of the Shamed Ones, those accursed by the gods. That is true so far as it goes. We are treated as shamed by our brethren, or by many of them. But we are not accursed. Many of us were once honored and commended by our people. Many of us made great sacrifices to Supreme Overlord Shimra. Yet we are treated with contempt because our bodies reject the modifications and implants the Yuuzhan Vong have chosen as symbols of rank and pride. The Jedi have helped us in the past. They have shown us a glimpse of the true path. I have seen in dreams and visions where that path leads. It leads to a planet that can heal and redeem us, that can bring the mighty down and raise up the humble and end the terror we all find ourselves enmeshed in. It is the planet of prophecy. It is Zonama Seacot. I have seen this planet, but the gods have not granted me the ability to find it. I do not despair, because I believe the Jedi know where it is. Here is what I beg of you, that you take me, and me alone, to the planet of prophecy, so that I may see it for myself, so I can know that my vision was true. Unfortunately, I do not have the means to come and go as I please. I live within the clenched fist of Shimra's hand, and shall need help escaping.
On the planet you once called Coruscant, I await your judgment. This Kosa contains a schedule of times I might meet you in a secluded place. It also contains what I have been able to gather about the planetary defenses of Yuuzhan'tar. I give this as a gesture of good faith. But be wary. I am unsure how complete the information is. I look to the stars, Jedi. I look to you. All our worlds can be better, I am certain. I have information that can be of benefit, which might end the war. But I cannot use it unless I reach Zonama Seacot. I may not speak of it here. If this falls into the wrong hands, the danger will be great, and I will not betray others. Heed my humble call, I beg you.
With that, the figure seemed to lean forward, as if bowing, and then the image froze.
It's a trick, Han blurted into the following silence. You all see that, right?
It's not a setup, Tahiri said. All eyes turned toward her. Tahiri, Leia began. Tahiri pushed ahead. His followers are already looking for Zonama Seacot, Tahiri said. I met some of them on Dagobah. Kenth, Leia said. What about the information on the Kosa? The data about planetary defenses. Can we check it out?
I have, to a certain extent. It looks good. We were able to get a drone in and out through some of the weak spots he described. And we have a secret weapon of our own. A captured Yuuzhan Vong ship. You're really thinking about biting at this? Han asked incredulously. We think the right team would have a shot.
What team? Leia asked. He means Corrin and me, Tahiri said.
Correct.
I'll do it, Tahiri said.
I've got blips on the horizon, Corrin muttered.
I see them, Tahiri said, her heart sinking slightly. Everything had gone fine up until now. The holes in Yuuzhan'tar's planetary defenses had been where they were supposed to be. They had successfully come through the upper atmosphere. Corrin hadn't even complained about her flying. But now, just when they were almost there, trouble came hunting like a cow. They haven't seen us yet, she told him. They're atmospheric flyers. They don't have the legs we do. Hang on, and hope the Dovin basals in this thing are healthy. She nosed up ever so slightly, and now her goal came in sight. Coruscant's single C. This is going to be really, really close, she told Corrin.
Great, Corrin said, teeth gritted.
The lozenge-shaped craft hit the water and skipped like a stone. Everything went crazy for a moment. She didn't quite black out, but the ship's pain jammed through her own thoroughly confused senses. She growled, then howled. When it all made sense again, she saw green. They were sinking.
I wonder how deep it is here, Corrin mused.
Not too deep, I hope, Tahiri said. Corrin tapped his data pad and pulled up a chart.
The Western Sea is like any sea. It's fed by rivers. But because Coruscant is Coruscant, the rivers are artificial. Big pipes, to be exact. If we take this one, he indicated a spot on the chart, it will get us pretty close to where we're going.
Assuming the tubes are still there, Tahiri said.
It's worth a look, Corrin said.
They found the river, a mammoth tube whose diameter the ship's radar analog suggested was 100 meters or so. Tahiri kept them centered in it and worked her way slowly up its length. That's funny, she said after a few minutes.
Funny ha-ha or funny we're about to die? Corrin asked.
Odd. What were these tubes made of? Tahiri asked.
Duracrete, mostly. Why?
That's what the sensor signature was like when we started in. But it's changed now.
Changed how?
It's irregular.
Maybe it's decomposing, Corrin suggested.
And not metal, she added.
Let me guess. It's alive.
Probably. Tahiri gave the command, and the Dovin basals quivered to life. They began moving back toward the entrance. Something slammed into the ship hard.
What is it? Corrin said.
Something big, Tahiri said. We're inside it.
Fire the plasma cannon.
In an enclosed space? That could be bad.
So could being digested.
Right. She bit back a shriek as plasma ejected into the water and brought it instantly to boiling, scalding and compressing her hull. The pressure and heat mounted, peaked, and then they were tumbling free. When they finally stabilized, the water in the eye lamps had gone dark blackish red, and nasty chunks of pulverized meat floated all around them.
Well, that was disgusting, Corin said.
Yes, Tahiri informed him, and this tube is sucking.
I agree, so let's get out of it.
No, she said, trying to remain calm. I mean, it's sucking us up it. Capillary action, probably, like the roots of a succession pool.
Surely not too hard to counteract with the Dovin basals.
Not at all, Tahiri replied, if, that is, the Dovin basals were working.
The Dovin basal is dead? Corin asked.
Not dead, Tahiri said, but it's badly damaged. I might be able to nudge it into responding, but it won't be able to keep it up for long, so I'll need to pick my moment. Or moments. I think short bursts of power would be okay. Corin frowned down at his chart.
Originally, there was a nexus up here where six smaller tubes branch off. It's probably coming up fast. If you can take the third from your left, do it.
The Dovin basal was starting to come out of its funk, though Tahiri could tell it was very weak. They couldn't fight the current, but her control of their forward motion improved. They made the next turn without clipping anything, and the next. A few moments later, the ship bobbed to the surface in a large open area. Tahiri made out a flat, sturdy-looking surface a tier above and gently coaxed the ship up to it.
Well done, Corin said.
Thank you. Are we where you thought we were? Corin studied the chart.
Yep. From here, we can find access tunnels to the place we were supposed to meet this prophet. All we have to do now is find him, bring him back here, and do all that in reverse.
Tahiri sighed. And find another ship. I don't think we can even make orbit in this one, much less a hyperspace jump.
Can't say the Vong have improved much on this, Corin remarked,
as they wound their way through the dark caverns that had once been Coruscant's underworld.
Of course, it was never exactly homey down here, he added.
A few moments later, they passed an immense shaft of some sort. Faint daylight illuminated it, so she could guess that it was perhaps 2 kilometers in diameter. Looking up, she could see a faint circle of rose-colored light. How deep is this shaft? She wondered aloud.
About 3 clicks.
What in the galaxy was this?
A garbage pit, he said. They used to shoot dangerous garbage into orbit from here, with magnetic accelerators.
That's a lot of garbage, Tahiri said. This is where we're meeting him?
Yes, in about 15 minutes if he's on time.
10 minutes later, they heard the faint echoes of footsteps. Tahiri put her hand on the grip of her lightsaber. It might be the Prophet, but it might be anything. A faint green luminescence appeared, carried by a tall, well-formed warrior.
It's a trick, Tahiri whispered.
She ignited her lightsaber. Corin's blazed on an instant later. The warrior stopped, now fully illuminated.
Jedi!
Look at him, Tahiri said. He's not malformed. He's not shamed.
But the warrior had dropped to his knees.
Jedi, he said in basic. Welcome. But you are not correct. I am indeed shamed.
After the initial shock, Tahiri had begun to notice other details, like the fact that the warrior wore no armor and that some of his scars and tattoos were incomplete.
You speak basic, Corin noticed. For your convenience, I am equipped with a Tyso worm.
Are you the Prophet? Corin asked.
I am not. I arrive before him to make certain all is safe. My name is Kunra.
Tahiri switched to Yuuzhan Vong.
Why were you shamed? She asked.
The warrior's eyes widened.
One who was shaped.
Then his eyes switched back to Corin and he returned to basic.
the Slayer of Shidao Shai. We expected Jidai, but not the most august of them.
Ah, there are still a few higher on the ladder than us, Corrin said. Luke Skywalker, for instance.
But he does not figure in our sacred tales.
Tahiri was in no mood to let the warrior become distracted.
I asked you a question, she snapped.
The warrior bowed his head.
I was a coward, he said.
You seem to have some courage, Corrin said. You came down here, not knowing if you would find us or an ambush.
I serve the truth now. It gives me courage, though I am still unworthy.
And yet, the most worthy of my disciples, a new voice said.
Tahiri glanced up. A tall figure had just come into the chamber. His face was a mass of unhealed scars and festering sores, his right ear missing. The sacs below his eyes were distended, yellow and... No, something was wrong. She looked more closely. It's not real, she realized. He's wearing a masker.
You're Yusha? Corrin asked.
I am. It is my honor to meet the great Tahiri Vela and Corrin Horn.
Tahiri acknowledged that greeting with a curt nod. The prophet bowed.
This is truly a blessed day, he said.
Right, Corrin said. Though for a blessed day, we've had some fairly unblessed setbacks, including the fact that our ship was destroyed in coming here.
You were discovered?
The prophet asked, a bit sharply. No, at least I don't think so. Tahiri watched him carefully while Corrin described what had happened. The prophet nodded when he finished.
You are correct, Blessed One. It is unlikely that you were discovered. As to the other, once more we see that the universe favors our cause. The final member of our party claims to have a ship at her disposal.
Final member of the party?
Yes, a Shaper who holds the secret to our redemption.
I thought you...
I am the prophet. I speak the truth and foretell what is to come. I am not myself the key to redemption. I merely see it.
Corrin glanced at Tahiri.
That's interesting, he said. But our mission, as I understood it, was to come here and get you and take you to Zanama Seacat.
I am sorry, the prophet said. But, as you said, your mission has changed already. Now we must have a ship. As to the Shaper, I could not speak of her on the Kosa. She is placed very close to Shimra. It is how she discovered Zanama Seacat in the first place.
Corrin sighed. Explain.
A commander named Ekim Val went to Zanama Seacat, Yusha said. He fought there and was defeated. But he returned with something of the planet, which the Shaper has studied. She discovered a certain inexplicable kinship between the biology of Seacat and our own biotechnology.
Again, interesting, but...
We are from another galaxy, Jedi Horn. We cross the starless night for age upon age. Our legends go deep, and yet nowhere is such a thing hinted at. At least, not in anything I ever heard. And yet here, in this time of darkness, two things are given us. To me, a vision of Zanama Seacat as a sign of our redemption. To the Shaper, the revelation that we have some prior relationship to this planet, a relationship that Shimra fears. I do not know what these things mean, but they can hardly be coincidence. But like me, this Shaper must see the world of salvation with her own eyes to know the truth, to know exactly what it all means.
And how do you know she isn't betraying you? Corrin asked. You say she's part of Shimra's inner circle. I'm sure he would like to get his hands on you at least as much as on the two of us.
No doubt. But I believe her. Ekim Val was murdered upon his return from Zonama Sikat, along with all his surviving men. Shimra fears even the rumor of this planet. The Shepar is already as good as dead merely for knowing what she knows. Shimra would never allow her to leave his compound, much less travel freely to the very planet he fears.
So you're saying we have to break her out of Shimra's compound? Tahiri blurted, incredulous.
Yes, I'm afraid it's the only way.
Yusha, Tahiri said, why are you wearing a masker? She felt Korin's reaction in the Force, a sudden heightening of suspicion. But the Prophet showed no surprise, nor should he have. Any Yuuzhan Vong would see the masker for what it was, an organism that presented a false face to the world.
You know our ways, he said. I wear this masker for my people. I have sworn not to remove it until our redemption has come.
No offense, Yusha, Korin said, but Tahiri and I need a moment to discuss this, alone.
Of course.
They walked a comfortable distance.
How does this smell to you? Korin asked.
I don't really like it, Tahiri said, but part of that might be a reflexive dislike of shamed ones.
You think that affects your read of the situation?
I hope not. I'm trying to fight it, but there's something about him I don't like. That's for sure.
Well, that makes two of us. But the question isn't whether we like him, or even whether we trust him. The question is he telling us the truth at this moment as he knows it?
I can't say for sure, Tahiri said, but this all seems pretty elaborate for a trap.
My thought exactly, Korin said. It doesn't make any sense. If they were going to do something, why not here? No, this has the feel of a real plan, albeit a pretty shoddy one. In fact, it's sort of reassuring.
There are hidden ways into Shimra's palace, Yusha told them. Some have been discovered, but there is one I am still certain of. I have been reluctant to use it, for once I do so, I cannot do so again. Once within, we must make our way to the Shepar compound.
If she has a ship, why can't she just fly it out? Tahiri asked.
I don't know, the Prophet replied. I know only that she requires defense of a substantial sort, or the escape will be impossible.
That's not all there is to it, Korin grunted. She wants it to look like a kidnapping, doesn't she? So she can have deniability later.
That seems possible, Yusha agreed.
How many warriors will we have to face?
My followers will help, of course, Yusha said. They will create a nearby disturbance which should draw warriors to another part of the palace compound. And you have friends inside the Damutek, of course.
That's all well and good, Korin said, but how many warriors will we have to face?
My guess is all I can give you, but I suspect no less than 10.
And as many as?
If things go wrong,
a few hundred.
Ah, Korin said. Then your people, the ones creating the distraction, will likely be killed, yes. But they are willing to die.
I think I have an idea, Korin said. Tahiri thought he sounded reluctant.
It might buy us the edge we need and get fewer of your people hurt in the process.
When they emerged from the darkened tunnels and into the light of Supreme Overlord Shimra's palace, Tahiri's knees went momentarily weak at the sight. His command ship, an enormous winged sphere, was nested at the top of it, as if the whole palace were a scepter, a symbol of might.
Pretty impressive, even Korin admitted. Now what?
Yusha pointed a finger toward a much more modest star-shaped complex.
That is the Shaper Damutek, he said.
Wait here for a few moments. When our ruse begins, it will be there.
Corrin counted at least 50 warriors patrolling the vast plaza.
Your people will be slaughtered. They will not fight for long. They will flee, and your brilliant plan will make certain that most of them are not followed.
And where will we meet you? Corrin asked the prophet.
There is a shrine to Yun Harla nearby. The Shaper will know where it is. If I survive, I will see you there.
One moment, nothing was happening. The next, a yellow-green explosion blossomed from the side of the building across the square, and the outer wall collapsed in sticky shards as if it had melted. Warriors all across the square raced for the source of the explosion, but before they could reach it, a mob of shamed ones sprang from a pit near the buildings and fell upon the warriors with kufis, amphistaffs, batons, even pipes and rocks. The fighting was confused by distance, but Tahiri could tell they weren't faring very well, though they fought with absolute conviction. Some impaling themselves on the amphistaffs of the warriors, immobilizing the weapons long enough for their companions to drag their foes down by sheer weight of numbers. This distraction wouldn't last long. She tensed to run.
Hang on, Corrin said. Wait until...
Even as he spoke, new actors appeared. Four figures in brown cloaks, bearing long glowing tubes of light. And everywhere went up the cry of Jedi, from warriors and shamed ones at once. There were few things that could bring a warrior greater honor than bringing down a Jedi in combat. The warriors didn't worship them as the shamed ones did, but they had learned respect. The Jedi suddenly turned and ran, and guards went after them howling. Indeed, guards who had not already left their posts now did so. Corrin had called that one pretty well. If there was anything that could make a warrior forget every duty he had, this was it.
Now, Corrin said.
Tahiri was already springing forward, now utterly focused on the single guard who still remained at the front closure of the Damutech. To the guard's credit, he wasn't too distracted by the fighting to see them coming. Unfortunately, his attention did not do him much good against two Jedi. At the door, Tahiri put her hand against the membrane.
Vika Quad.
The opening dilated.
That was easy,
Corrin said. It should be, Tahiri answered. This Damutech belongs to my domain.
Master Yim? Someone asked from the doorway.
She looked up from the series of cool embryos she'd been vivisecting. It was Keela Quad.
What is it? There's some sort of disturbance in the outer compound. They say it is shamed ones.
Disturbance?
What are they doing? They've attacked the amphistaff nursery.
Trying to arm themselves, I suppose, Nin Yim replied.
Go secure the laboratories. Yes, Master Yim.
The adept hurried off.
Well, she considered, this must be it.
She straightened from her task and moved to the wall. From a pouch adhered to her belly, she withdrew a thorn-shaped creature with a thin, hard shell, located a nerve cluster in the wall, and thrust it in. It hissed softly as it began injecting toxin into the Damutech. It would paralyze the living structure's defenses, allowing whoever was coming after her to do so without having to deal with corridor-sealing membranes and debilitating gas. She grabbed an enveloping cloth surrounding a set of selected Shaper Bioware and a Kossa and hurried up the corridor toward the Sikoten ship. The ship was as she had seen it the day before, shimmering gently, waiting for her. Excitement grew in her. She was stepping forward, touching it with her master's hand, when several figures burst through the doorway into the room. Two humans, and by their whipping, burning, unlife brands, certainly Jedi. They were engaged with eight warriors. Both of the humans already bore several bloody gashes. But as she watched, two more Yuuzhan Vong warriors fell from sizzling, cauterized wounds. One of the remaining guards turned to face her.
Master Yim, flee. There is danger here.
My apologies, she said. She extended her master's hand, and a long whip-like sting, no thicker than a straw, snaked out and impaled him through the eye. He died without a sound. She curled her hand, and the sting wrapped around the neck of another warrior and bit through the arteries of his neck. She released it, recalled it, and shot it back out to kill a third. The Jedi cut down the last of their stunned opponents and stood panting over corpses, staring at her. The gaze of the yellow-haired one struck Nen Yim like a thud bug, and a jolt of recognition ran through her.
You, she said. You've come to kill me.
Tahiri gave Nen Yim a cold grin.
You think so? She said. Why would I do that?
Merely because you tortured me, turned my brain inside out, tried to turn me against everything I had ever known?
You two know each other then, Corrin speculated.
Tahiri nodded grimly.
She's one of the Shapers who experimented on me. Her name is Nen Yim.
Turning to the Shaper, she continued,
You have no idea what you've put me through, Nen Yim. I nearly died. I nearly went mad. But you did not.
I did not. Nor did I become what you were trying to make of me.
That was fairly clear when you decapitated Mijan Quad, the Shaper replied.
Yes, Tahiri said. That was a quick end for her. My torture lasted a lot longer. She took a deep, slow breath and lowered her weapon. Her hand was trembling and her belly was tight. She willed the muscles to relax.
We've come a long way through a lot of trouble for you, she said. I don't intend to kill you. Not now. You're the reason we're here, aren't you?
I wish to see Zonama Seacott, the Shaper said. If you have come to take me there, then yes.
Time's wasting, Corrin said. What do we do?
I need an opening in that wall, large enough for this ship to pass through. I'm certain your weapons can accomplish it.
Tahiri nodded at Corrin, and together they moved to the coral wall indicated and began carving chunks from it. While they were still less than half done, shouts went up behind them. Before Corrin could react, Tahiri spun and charged the new attackers. There were three of them.
Finish! She cried. I'll take these.
All three bore amphistaffs. She hurled herself at them, as if committed to a full-on charge, but at the last instant stopped short. As a result, the counterattack from the lead warrior was also short. She picked up the rigid end of his staff in a high bind and cut down through juncture of neck and shoulder, sweeping her blade around to catch a second attacker in a high parry. Then she dropped, instinctively ducking the slash from the third. Even so, the second warrior recovered quickly and wrapped his suddenly flexible staff around her ankle. Tahiri used the force to leap away, and the warrior yanked her back, which was what she'd been planning. She went with the pull, and both of her feet hit him in the face. He grunted and fell back, but didn't release the staff. As she fell, she reversed her weapon and let the third warrior impale himself through the armpit. Black vapor exploded from the wound, and the scent of burning blood sang in her nostrils. She rolled to get back to her feet, but the remaining warrior kicked her in the side of the head. The blow rang in her skull, and white lights threatened to blot out her vision. She swung wildly, but failed to connect with anything. Then everything went strange, as something hard and sharp went through her shoulder.
Oh, she said. Oh.
Her arms were suddenly rubber. She saw the warrior look away, and then suddenly, he was headless. His body dropped away almost gently. Corrin stood above her.
Come on, he said.
Poison,
Tahiri mumbled. She tried to stand, but her legs were already beyond answering her demands. She was vaguely aware that Corrin got her up on his shoulder and was taking her toward the strange ship.